Welcome to Hot Yoga Radio. This is the second part of our series on thinking about thinking. In this part, the main thing that I want to do is briefly outline a taxonomy of types of reason. Now, in the first part, Anna and myself celebrated thinking. We recommended it for its pleasures as well as its uses, as well as its absolutely indispensable practical uses. But actually, what we might well ask, what is reason? What is rationality? This is by no means an easy question. Now, in taxonomising types of reason, which I intend to do in a moment, I'm taking an anthropological approach. In a sense, I'm behaving like a Martian who comes down to Earth to study the humans and what they do. And one of the things that they do is they argue amongst themselves as to priorities, as to what human beings ought to be doing, what character ought to be like, how societies ought to be organised, and so on and so on. And in the course of these conversations and arguments and struggles, there is very often appeal is made to the rationality of the arguments or the reasonableness of the stories. And there's a whole language of evaluating the reasonableness of stories, the rationality of arguments. For instance, we would contrast crazy thinking with rational thinking. When somebody goes mad, we say they've lost their reason. We'll also, perhaps in these conversations, draw upon the term irrationality or irrationalism. Now, irrationalism would be the willful espousal of a doctrine that reason is so limited we should abandon it, give ourselves over to our passions and impulses. And this, actually, believe it or not, is a kind of a pretty common position, actually. Anyway, what I'm going to draw on to taxonomise types of reason is an account given by Jürgen Habermas, a 20th century German philosopher who was part of the Frankfurt School. And I'm not going to religiously and accurately give an account of Habermas's thought here. It's been a long time since I looked at this stuff. But what I'm actually going to do is use it. I'm going to allow myself to be irritated by it, and hopefully productively. And I'm hoping that what I come out with will have a kind of an illuminating effect on the rest of what we say in these podcasts, and hopefully a little bit of what was said in the first one. Now, Habermas discerned at least three types of reason, and he called these formal reason, instrumental reason, and communicative reason. And it's actually very useful to have these distinctions in place instead of trying to deal with one blanket portmanteau term, rationality or reason. Formal reason includes logic and fundamental mathematics. The formal reason actually works with rules of inference. And perhaps as an aspect of formal reason, we might attempt to refine logic to make the rules more certain, more watertight, more useful, easier to use, more powerful in their application. And of course there's a lot of effort been given over to this, at least since Aristotle. Sometimes it's a project that's gone on the back burner in world history, and other times it's come to the fore. Certainly late 19th and the 20th century saw a heyday in logical research. I mean, the figures we would mention here, Frege, Russell, Wittgenstein, but also Husserl, who started out thinking about logic before becoming the grandfather of phenomenology. So the way logic works actually is that logic, there are more than one logic, there are logics. There are different systems and different types, and it's a pretty vast subject. But basically logic provides the rules of inference. And if you apply the rules correctly to true premises, you can expect to get true conclusions. And that's kind of pretty useful. But actually logical systems are kind of closed systems, built on axioms, rather like geometry. And an axiom is a first principle that you just take for granted, that you have to take for granted. You regard it as self-evident. It's the place where the questioning stops. And you can build all kinds of systems based on axioms. Wittgenstein called these axioms the propositions of logic. So in a sense, logic is kind of a closed system. Nevertheless, it furnishes us with tools with which to make inferences, and hopefully true inferences. So a formal reason. Next one Habermas mentions. Instrumental reason is the type of reason we apply in order to be able to predict and control the environment, predict the future, control the environment. This is what instrumental means in this context. It means the reason which we put to use to deal with our concerns, to meet the necessary demands for survival on us that life makes. And basically instrumental reason is science. Because science works towards formulations which enable us to predict the future. I mean, the paradigm case is the scientific law, say the law of gravity, which we can put the numbers in the formula and get the result. And the result tells us how a certain state of affairs will pan out, a certain course of events will pan out if we do such and such. This is the kind of thing in analogy to put a rocket on the moon, fire a ballistic shell. Obviously, it's proved really powerful. The whole industrial revolution and the industrialisation of the world, and the massive increases in productive capacity of the economies of the world, it's been due to this, that to the development of this instrumental reason, which has gone on at a very fast speed since the 18th century, when it was realised the potential, this way of going about stuff. Now the first formal reason is a great servant of instrumental reason. It provides the mathematical tools, the logical tools, to do the work. And indeed, formal reason has proved incredibly useful, in fact crucial, for the development of information technology. The whole thing is based on a substrate of very well worked out style of formal reason. without the logic, the machines don't work. You know, they've got nothing to go on. They've got no fuel, no algorithms are possible without it. So there's an overlap there as well. The third type of reason mentioned by Habermas is communicative reason. And this is to do with the way human beings evaluate their values, their concerns, and their projects for the future. And this is when we get into kind of fuzzier areas than the laws of physics or the refinement of the rules of inference. This is when we try and be rational about thinking about society, about thinking about psychology, about thinking about character, about thinking about ethics, about thinking about aesthetics, about thinking about the politics of deciding about values which are going to impact on the future or on the future architecture of society. So politics. When it's carried out rationality, when the arguments are carried out with at least a nod towards keeping the rules of inference and working with real facts, even though political programs are always underdetermined by the facts, and they always end up being narratives in which the instrumental and formal reason components are not decisive to the outcome. This is the famous underdetermination of the theory by the facts that you get when you try to treat complex phenomena like history, like society, like the human psyche. Now, communicative reason is a collective endeavour. This is about the conversation of humankind, hence the word, hence the title, communicative. It's about communication. This is about the stories that go back and forth, the narratives that are traded back and forth in the ideological struggle, as well as the kind of rational planning and reflection that goes on around the human future and ideas of what the proper human character is and what proper human behaviour is and what proper legality is and so forth. So communicative reason and the effort to refine that is the effort to be able to weigh competing accounts of humanity and the world and how those accounts might project forward into the human future. So the whole conversation of humankind is in question when we attempt to refine communicative reason. It strikes me that this is a really important task. Now, it's probably a task that can't ever be finished. There's probably not a decisive end point to this. There's no closure, I don't think, on this matter. Nevertheless, I'm one of those funny people in this postmodern world who says, well, one narrative isn't necessarily as good as another. We do perform complex weighings and evaluations on the stories that we hear. And we ourselves are entangled with those evaluations. Our dispositions, maybe our genetic tendencies to various moods, various posturings. You know? When somebody said that, you know, you could actually find the conservative gene or the revolutionary gene. So we're dealing with that as well. We do ourselves when we try and do these evaluations, even though we're in conversation with the world and with history, at the same time, ourselves are on the line when we try and work with communicative reason. Anyway, I hope that that's helpful. I certainly think we want that distinction in mind when we go on and talk about the uses of unreason in the next two episodes. Well, I'm almost at the Oxleymoor Road Bridge now, and there's quite a lot of traffic. It gets a bit noisy down here, so I'm going to sign off. And if you are subscribing to Hot Yoga Radio, well, thanks for doing so, and I hope it's keeping you're interested. And then anybody feels like sponsoring us, well, we'll be grateful, because it enables us to carry on and do more of this entertaining. Over and out, friends.